starting Parak Vayigash. We're going way into the parsha. Parak Menvav. I'm sorry, Menvav is not a good word. Menvav Pasuk Yud Zayin. It says, "Ubnei Asher, the children of Asher, those of the 70 that came down in Mitzrayim, Yimna, the Yishva, the Yishvi, and Bria, and finally came Serach Achosam, Serach their sister. Ubnei Bria Chaver Malkiel, and the sons of Bria were Chaver and Malkiel. Those are the people who were alive. They were the sons of Asher and Serach, their sister," which is strange. She is the only sister mentioned over here. It doesn't mention Serach, his daughter. It says Serach, their sister. And then aside from that, I mean, it's a very... Who is she? Who is Serach? What is she doing over here? By the way, over here it is spelled with a sin. You are correct, Binyamin. It is spelled that way. Over here, the Torah Shlema tells us that she came to Eretz Yisrael and then Mitzrayim and lived for very many years, meaning then she went back to Eretz Yisrael. She lived for very many years because she was such a big tzaddikus. She was the Isha Chachama, if anybody remembers, in Shmuel Bey's Perek Chaf, who gave over Sheva ben Bichri to Yoav, that when Yoav surrounded the city and wanted to destroy the city, Serach was the wise woman inside who called out to Yoav and said, "What do you want with the city? Why are you destroying the city? What did we do to you?" To which Yoav said, "I'm looking for a man who rebelled against David HaMelech. I'm looking for a man named Sheva ben Bichri." And Serach sent him out, even though he was going to be killed. And we learn a halacha from there that you're allowed to send somebody out in order to get this. So that's what he ended up doing. He sent out Sheva ben Bichri over to Yoav. She lived close to 620 years, according to all Mephorshim. There seems to be no other Mephorshim that say differently. 620 years altogether, and according to the Sefer Yalkut Or Hafela, he never tasted sin. In the end, she was such a tzaddikas that in Derech Eretz Zuta, which is a small mesechta, at the end of Perek Aleph, it says that she went to Gan Eden alive. That's the little bits of information about Serach Bas Asher, and that's that. Now the Moshe of the Canaan tells us, the Moshe of the Canaan is a Rishon, he tells us in this week's Parsha, she was not the daughter of Asher, which is why it's said over here that she's their sister, but not the daughter of Asher. Because she wasn't. She was from a previous marriage that Asher's wife had before she was married to Asher. She joined her mother when her mother married Asher, and came into the family and was adopted by Asher, and Asher treated her as if she was his daughter, but she was never his daughter. And therefore, she's not listed as a daughter over here. The Moshe of the Canaan. Moshe of the Canaan says that. The Panach Raza gives a hint for it when it says over here that it was their sister, Achosam. And Targum Unkelus and Bamidbor, Chaf Vav, Men Vav, says, Vishum Bas Itza Asher. And the name of the daughter of the wife of Asher was Sarach. The name of the daughter of the wife of Asher, but not the daughter of Asher, even though the pasuk seems to say the daughter of Asher, but that's the way it was supposed to be. Now the Shvatim were worried, according to the Medrash Gadol. And where Sarah comes into play in this week's parsha was a little bit earlier. According to the Medrash Gadol, that if they went in to Yaakov, to Yaakov Avinu, and told him that Yosef HaTzadik was alive, that he was living in Egypt, and that he was in charge of all the things in Egypt, he would be shocked, and he would die from that shock. So what did they do? What did these Shvatim do? They told Sarah Bas Asher to go herself and tell him. Says the Hazir Zakenim, it's Medriyak from the words, that when they told Yaakov Avinu was going on, it says, Vayagidu lo lemor. And they told him, saying, O Yosef Chai, that Yosef will still live. Lemor is normally a word used to say, tell over to other people. In other words, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe, Hashem spoke to Moshe, lemor, say to the people the following. So over here, Vayagidu lo lemor, they told him, saying, means, they told him by saying to somebody else. They told someone else to tell him about this, and that's what they end up doing. And the Sefer Medrash Seichel Tov, it says from the word Vayagidu lo, it's missing the letter Yud in the middle. Vayagidu is Gimel Dalet Vav at the end, and from that missing letter Vav, they have a diak over there that it was supposed to be that it wasn't them, it wasn't the ten Shvatim who told Yaakov, but rather somebody else instead. She waited until he was davening Shmona Esrei. Davening, I guess, Mariv, although he might have davened Shacharis and Mincha together with Avram and Yitzchak did, but he was davening Shmona Esrei, and she said in a wondrous voice, said the Hadras of Canaan, Yosef b'Mitzrayim, Yosef lived in Mitzrayim, Yuldolo al-Birkayim, there was born to him on his knees, Menashe v'Ephraim. That's a great rhyme by any stretch of the imagination. It's an awesome rhyme and a very, very good poem. That's what Serach Bas Asher told him. It shocked him, but he was in the middle of Shemona Esrei, so he refused to really listen to it. When he finished his Shemona Esrei, he looked up and saw the wagons coming, because Serach Bas Asher came a little bit before the Shvatim did, and his spirit rose within him. He knew that they were Egyptian wagons and realized that Yosef was alive. At that moment, he had Ruach HaKodesh, and that's what happened. That's what it means by Yafag Libo when he woke up. I'm sorry? I think she felt that that would be the best time for him not to be shocked. If he heard in the middle of his Shemona Esrei, he wouldn't really be paying attention. If he was fully listening to her and he heard those lines, he would be too shocked and possibly he would die. That's the reason why.
Shemona Esrei, I don't think he was saying...
not the words that we have. Although if he did, maybe not that one.
But...
David, probably not. Samach Abram Avdecha. Something like that. What? In a bridge version, right? Havi Neinu or something like that. That would be it. Either way, the question would be, did she really sing it? I mean, we already know it, right? Sefer Yashar says it a little bit differently. Serach came out to greet him. Serach came out to greet all the Shvatim when the Shvatim were coming by. She was a very wise woman who knew to play on the harp very well. So the Shvatim said, Serach, you're the one who's going to have to tell Yaakov, you know, about what happened. They told her what to do, and she ran ahead of them to the tent and started playing at her harp at a very, very soft tune, almost so that it wasn't able to be heard. Yosef, my uncle, is alive. He rules all over Egypt. He's not dead. But said it so softly that in order to hear it, Yaakov was straining almost, and hearing like word by word, little by little, and then she heard it a second time, then he heard it a third time, Sarah kept singing it again and again and again, or saying it in a melodious voice, right? And she said it over and over and over again, and he understood. He felt simcha. He received the spirit of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and knew that she was telling the truth as Nevuah entered within him, and then he blessed her. He gave her a bracha, says the Sefer Yashar. That was the that he gave her. Did she really sing? So none of the Midrashim, there's only two Midrashim that mention this. It's in the Sefer Yashar and the Hadar Zakenim. Neither one of them say that she sang a song, but it says that she was melodious. Her voice was beautiful and she said it in a tune, in almost a tune. But did she sing? It's an Afkamina, by the way. Can you listen to a woman sing it? Okay, that Rav Ovadia Yosef's Tshuva, notwithstanding. Rav Ovadia Yosef Paskins and Yabia Omer, Shalos Jews, Yabia Omer, Simon Vav. So for those of the Ashkenazim of Vav here, especially the Litvaks, I'm sorry. But Rav Ovadia Yosef Paskins, that you are allowed to listen to a woman singing if you've never seen her before and you don't know what she looks like. Then you are allowed to listen to her sing. Unless I read it incorrectly, which I think I read it correctly, that's what he says. Most don't hold that way, but Rav Ovadia Yosef definitely has a tshuva that way. The kasha is, Yaakov, could he listen to his granddaughter sing? Now, if she was the daughter of Asher, and she was a granddaughter, then that would be mutter. You can listen to your granddaughter sing. But can you listen to your step-granddaughter sing? Because if she wasn't the daughter of Asher, she was the daughter of the previous wife, or the wife of Asher from a previous marriage, then could he listen to her sing? That's why the Midrashim do not use the word Mizamer or Mizamra. Instead, he uses the word Amra, the Lashon, in a certain type of tune that was there, but it wasn't a real song. That would be that. Rav Chaim Kanievsky points out that it was never really a real song. According to Yonas and Brazil, the bracha that she received was reward for her to go to Gan Eden alive. As we said before, she went to Gan Eden alive. Some say that it was from Yaakov's bracha that the mouth that said such beautiful words should never taste death. That literally it's exactly from there. The reason why his words were so potent is something that we all know from every wedding. Everybody goes up to the chasen and the kala after the wedding. If you're a guy, the chasen, the girl, the kala, but obviously not the other way around, because that would be terrible. And you go up and you ask for a bracha. Everybody goes and asks for a bracha. Why are you asking the chasen for a bracha? And to be honest with you, they're doing it wrong. You're asking them for brachas when they're in the midst of trying to eat, when they're sitting there at the front table and you're going up toward the end of the wedding. The time to ask for a bracha, the proper time to ask for a bracha, is when they're so misameach, they're so besimcha, they're so happy, they can't get over themselves. At that moment, that's when you're supposed to ask for the bracha. Chaim Menachem says, at that moment when they're in pure, pure happiness, like in the midst of dancing, there are chassidim that will push ahead and go and find the Rebbe and give the Rebbe a kvissel right at that moment. So he could read the Kavitzel in the midst of all of their simcha, in the midst of everything. And the reason why is because when you're so happy, you have a spark of Kedusha that's handed to you, and that spark of Kedusha comes from Elio Anavi, that allows you to give a bracha like you've never given before in your life. When Yaakov Avinu heard what Tzarach Bas Asher told him, that Yosef Atzadik is alive, as soon as he heard that, he immediately was besimcha like he'd never been in before. He had Ruach HaKodesh right at that moment, and at that moment he gave a bracha to Tzarach, and he said, Tzarach, you should live forever. And it happened. That bracha was fulfilled, and Tzarach Bas Asher lived to 620 years, and then went to Gan Eden alive. It was fully fulfilled from what had happened over here. That's the idea behind it. And it tells you, when you're in the midst of tremendous simcha, there is a koach that you can get a bracha at that moment. I've done it many, many times, and I will do it in all of your classes, because I try very, very hard. When you're in the midst of dancing, and I'm pulled into the middle, and I'm dancing together with the chassan, I say, give me a bracha. Right then and there. Just a short little bracha. Nothing big. Just bracha batzlacha. I mean, if it's good enough for Rav Chaim Kanievsky, we'll say that for now, we might as well get something from it. I guess if you say that Rav Chaim Kanievsky even bracha batzlacha is probably better than even if you gave a bracha for 700 years. But regardless, it's enough to be able to get just a tiny little bracha batzlacha during that moment of pure simcha. When everything's going on, that's the way to be able to do it. The exact same thing happened to David HaMelech. David HaMelech was in the beginning of Malachim Aleph. They were all wondering who's going to be the next king. David HaMelech had already said through Nathan HaNavi and God HaChozeh that Shlomo HaMelech was going to be king, but Adoniyahu had already gone down to the river to anoint himself as the next king. So he said Bathsheba came in and Nathan HaNavi came in, and Shlomo HaMelech said it will be Shlomo. Shlomo HaMelech is going to be the next one. Bathsheba was so happy at that moment hearing that her son was going to be the next king of Klal Yisrael that she called out loud and she said Yechi HaMelech David Lo'olam. May the King David live forever. May he live forever. And because of that, David HaMelech lived forever. We all know the line. David Melech Yisrael, Chai V'Kayim. David Melech Yisrael, Chai V'Kayim. That he is alive and good for all times. Why? Because of the bracha given over to from Bathsheba. That's the idea behind it. As a side note, there is a bit of a stira. There are others that say that it was not Tzarach Bas Asher that gave the bracha over to Yaakov, you know, or said the line over to Yaakov, you know, that Yosef was still alive. It was Naphtali. Naphtali was called an Ayala Shlucha. He's the one for messages. He's the swift hind who goes out and delivers messages for Klal Yisrael. It was Naphtali that did it to him. So but maybe you could answer them both together. Maybe Sarah hinted it to Yaakov, but she never fully said it. And Yaakov he wasn't positive until Naphtali, who was the swiftest of all the Shvatim, came in and said, yes, it's true. Yosef HaTzadik is alive. I saw him with my own eyes. So I don't think it's that much of a steer. You could say that Sarah and Naphtali were both involved over here. Now,
yeah,
we'll get to another subject.
Told Sarah.
Who told?
Then Naphtali came to talk about, go prepare him.
Go ahead and prepare, no question. Yeah, and then Naphtali ran ahead and did it before the other shotgun came. Now, when we go through all this list over here, Elish Mos Ben Yisrael Bo Yim Mitzrayim.
What was the significance of 620 years? Why?
I don't know why. It's brought down by the Chassam Sofer, and then I saw it again in the Yalkut, and I'm sorry, the Torah Shlema, that she lived for 620 years. Tough Reish Chaf Shanim. And 620 years, probably until Shevet Ben Bichri, that's what we know her until. Now, if you count all this, it starts in Pasuk Ches, in Perek Mamvav Pasuk Ches. If you go through the numbers over here, it counts all the way up to 70. It says, Ubnei Yosef, etc. Kol ha-nefesh lo-beis Yaakov ba-mitzrayim shivim. There were 70 altogether. Now, it's funny, because if you go through the numbers, it doesn't add up. From Leah, there are 32 children mentioned, and yet at the end it says, Kol nefesh banu v'bnosef shloshim v'shalosh. 33. You can count it up yourself. There are 32 people mentioned. 33 listed by the Pasuk. Then it goes into, I'm sorry? Including Dina, there's 32. If you count Zilpa altogether, there's 16 people mentioned. 16 altogether, by the way, it's cute. 32 divided by 2 is 16. So Leah and Zilpah, there was 32 and 16. Rachel, then when they counted all up together, because Binyamin had so many kids, had 14. 14 kids altogether. And then when you count up Bilah had altogether 7. Again, 14 and 7. I found it interesting. I don't know why the Gruff points it out that it's 32 and 16 and then 14 and 7, but I don't know what the girl was using to explain. It just seems to say it was a bit of a simon. But count that all up together. 32 plus 14, right, all together is 46, right? If you count up another 14, then that's 60, right? You count up another 7, right? And that's all together 67. Now, if you count up all together, now that would work out, right? So I'm off by one over here. 14 plus 7 is 21, right? 32 and 16. Thank you very much. So it's 32 and 16 all together. So what it is, it's 48. And we're all together 69. That's 48. 48 plus 14 is all together
21, right?
Well, yeah, 62 and then 7 is 69 all together. Okay? Now, that's including Yosef as well as Menashe and Ephraim who were in Mitzrayim already. It's all together 69, that means you're off. We don't have a 70th person. Now, it did count 33 over here by Leah, and there's an idea that it could be somebody like Yaakov, but there's 33 over here, but if you count it up, it's only 32. Who is number 70? So there are seven answers that are given by the Medrash as to who is number 70.
Yaakov?
I'm sorry?
Isn't the simplest answer Yaakov?
By far. We're going to get to it. Hold on. There are 70 people mentioned here. Women married to the Shlatin are not counted, because it does say Milvad Neshei Banov, aside from the wives of his kids. So any woman that is married to any of the Shvatim or anybody around here is not being counted over here. That's that. That takes care of all the twins of any other woman who have been around. So if you go around and you say, like, what? There were 68 men and 2 girls. Don't go crazy. It's fine. First of all, I'm okay with that. Right? But it's not that crazy. It's just there were other women. They were all married to people. And that's why they weren't counted of Ishto Kigufo. And that would be the idea behind it. Dina and Sarah are the only two women counted because they didn't marry one of the Shvatim. Although there's an opinion that Dina married Shimon, there's no question that Dina eventually at some point married Eov. So therefore, because of that, Dina's not counted, and Sarah's not counted because we don't know who Sarah married at the end of the day. Sarah also married somebody, but they're not there. As we know from counting them up all together, so who is number 70? So the first thing you got to know, the answer before anything else, there's a rush. The rush is at the end of Pesachim. If anybody looks in Pesachim by Arvei Pesachim, the 10th parak in Os Mem, the Torah quotes it here as well, the Torah Ala Torah, not the Bala Turim. Torah quotes it as well. Whenever you see a number in the Torah, says the Rosh in the Torah, the Rosh obviously is the father of the Torah, not a coincidence, right? They say it's rounding up. It's rounding up. When it says they were 40 years eating mun in the desert, they weren't really eating the mun for 40 years. They were eating it for 39 years, but it's as if it was 40 years. When there are 40 malachos, there's not 40, it's 39. When there are 40 lashes, it's not 40, it's 39. Right? Each time, whenever it mentions the Soto over here, when it says 70, it doesn't mean there are 70 people. There's really 69, but it rounded up. That's their answer. So, that the obvious question on the Rosh, which is asked immediately by the Pilpuli Charit on the bottom of the page, in Pesachim, asks, what about 33? That's not rounding up, and it was only 32. How could you do that? And if you do use 33, 33 plus 16 plus 14 plus 7 is 70. So that does work out well. So what's the problem over here? That's that. And aside from that, in numerous places, you guys have definitely seen Gemaras, where the Gemara asks the question, why does it say 70 when it's really 69? The Gemara Baba Basra Kufkov Gimel asks it. The Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Lamed Ches asks it about the mun. How could it say that they ate mun for 40 years? How could that be? The Gemara asks this as a question. So the Rush's answer of it rounds up doesn't flow with the Gemara that asks questions, why is it rounding up? That doesn't make much sense according to that idea. So Medrash Rabbah, in this week's Parsha in Siman Tzadi Dalet, gives a bunch of different answers. The famous one is that Gemara Baba Basra Kupkov Gimel, in which it says, Yocheved was born at the gates of Mitzrayim, and she was number 70. She's not mentioned because at the time when they were coming down, she wasn't born yet. But Yocheved was born as they entered the walls of Mitzrayim. That's when her mother gave birth to her. What was her mother's name? It's mentioned in a pasuk in the Torah. But it's probably one of the rarest names, and you never heard anybody else ever named by it. It's Levi's wife. Her name is Osa. Osa. It's a rush in Devarim that says that Levi's wife's name was Osa. And they gave birth. Levi and Osa gave birth to Yocheved right as she was entering. Says Reb Wolfson, the reason why she was born right there at the gates when they were going in is because the Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted to bring the refuah before the Makkah. The healing, the way that they'd be able to get out of Mitzrayim is through Yocheved's kid. See, Yocheved, the mother of the future Moshiach, Savior of Klal Yisrael, was born before before or right at the moment when they went down to Mitzrayim, so they would know, don't worry, you're going to be saved. Everything will be okay. That's answer number one, and that's Yochaved. And that's the answer that it was. It's called a pearl of wisdom in the Gemara. The Yochaved was number 70. Answer number two is what you said before, Binyamin, and what you said before, Ezra. It's the obvious answer. Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov counts as number 70. That works well with the Pesukim. Because if you say that there were 33, it probably adds on Yaakov at some point, even though there are only 32 people mentioned with Leah. You'd assume that Yaakov is being mentioned over there as well. So that makes a lot of sense. And in Pshat, all of the Meforshim will explain Pshat. The Ibn Ezra, the Rashbam, all of the Meforshim that go into Pshat and the Pesukim, they all say Yaakov's number 70. They all say it, because it's the most obvious answer, that Yaakov is number 70. But that's not the end of the Medrash. Number 3, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, always HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is added on as number 70. Says Rav Wolfson, this is the Makor, the source, to where we learn of the idea called Kolel. You've always heard of Gematria, and the Gematria is off by one. And your Rebbe told you, don't worry, Gematria can be off by one, because we include HaKadosh Baruch Hu in every Gematria. And you always sat there, and on the outside you're like, oh yeah, and on the inside you're like, that's garbage. You've always said that. It's from here. This is where we learn it from. There are 70 people, even though they only count up to being 69, because the 70th person was HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's the Kolel, that when you're including, you can always include HaKadosh Baruch Hu into any of your equations to add on one. It comes from this concept, from what we're doing over here. Crazy concept.
It's kind of weird that Yaakov is not included in the 70, but God is.
But HaKadosh Baruch Hu includes himself. You know, it's funny. The Medrash answers that question by saying, when they left Mitzrayim, there were 600,000 Jews, right? Says the Medrash, there were 599,999 Jews. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu added himself in to be the 600,000, just like he was number 70 when they went into Mitzrayim, he was number 600,000 when they left Mitzrayim.
Oh,
that's the matter.
550.
No, not yet. Only later on. This is the deal turn 20 when they did the counting in Rosh Chodesh Iyar. That's what it was altogether. But not at that time. Right after the Egel Azov, I should say. Right around then. That's number 3. Number 4. This is my favorite one. Dun. When we mention Dun in the Pesukim over here, it says, Ubnei Dun Hushim. And the sons of Dun was a guy by the name of Hushim. Children of Dun are Hushim. But Hushim is one guy. Plural. There's only one guy over there. So it is plural. So the kash is, what does that mean? Some say that Hushim ben Dun counts as two. So here's the pshat. There's a bunch of different pshats over here. The Ibn Ezra and the Chizkuni both say there was a second son, but he died. And that's why he's not listed over here. So Ubnei Dun, there ended up being only Hushim. The other one died. By the way, as a side note, okay, I'm going to say this parenthetically. Rav Moshe Feinstein says you're not allowed to say anything about the Avos or the Shvatim that is not written straight out in the Pasuk as a punishment for them. Meaning, if somebody, you can't just go out and say that Avraham Avinu had a daughter that died, like Bakal. You can't just say that his daughter died. You can't say that, because if the Pasuk didn't say that his daughter died, you are not allowed to make up a parish that his daughter died. So even though the Maral Vitzkin and the Sam Sofer both say that he had a daughter and the daughter Bakal died before Avraham Avinu died, nonetheless, you can't say it unless the Pasuk says, it says Rav Moshe. It's an Orach Chaim Chelek Dalet Os Simin Mem Os Vav. That's where Rav Moshe says it. The funny thing is, right here, you see that the Rishonim are all saying that Naphtali, or there are three Rishonim that say that Dun had a child that dies. It's clear. Clear as day that he said that he had a child that passed away. Okay, so the implication. Okay, I hear it. I mean, they're learning out from the word velipkosa. If you take out the little cup, it becomes ulubita. They're also darshaning of us, and they're not just making it up. But anyway, regardless, Yalka Ruvaini says, also, since he knew he was going to have one, maybe his wife was pregnant. Since his wife was pregnant, he knew he was going to have one, so that's two altogether. Others say he was so chosh of Hushin, because if you switch around the letters of his name, ches shin yud mem, you switch around the letters, you come out with the word?
Mashiach,
that is correct. And we all know that Hushim ben Dun was the progenitor of Mashiach because of what he does to Esav in next week's parsha, where he cuts off his head. He's the one who cuts off Esav and destroys Esav at the end of the day. That's what it's supposed to be. The problem with this pshat is that Reb Meir argues and says that in his Torah, it says, Uben Dun Hushim. The son of Dun is Hushim. Now there's three times in the Torah where Meir seemingly changes around the Pasuk. Kusnos Or, when they were given clothing, Adam and Chava, instead of the word Or as in Ayin Vav Resh, leather clothing, he has Kusnos Or with an Aleph. Over here, Ben Dun Hushim, he switches it around. You want further ideas behind the subject, I refer you to many, many Sfarim, because it's not the time for it. But it is a big kasha how Reb Meir could switch around a letter in the Torah and take something out when he felt that it didn't belong there. The answer is, he wasn't taking anything out, he was darshaning. The question is, what does it mean to darshan and to say ben dun instead of ben adun? But that's not for right now. Number 5 and number 6, there was a twin born with Dina, who is not counted, and she was not married to anyone. Number six is that Osnas, the daughter of Dina, who was married to Yosef, she counts. And she's number 70, I know, even though she's married. I guess because she's not one of the daughters. I don't know. It's very strange. What? Yeah, but Yosef was also counted, right? Yosef and his two sons. So Osnas was counted as well, yeah.
Wasn't it registered that each Shevet had a twin sister?
Yeah, so the twins, as we said, were probably married to each one of them, and therefore they weren't counted because each took Yigufo. Or, I mean, straight out in the Yalkut Rubeni, that they died. All of them died. They were all gone. Number 7, and this is our last one. Serach Bas Asher counts as 2. And that's what connects us to the rest of the thing. Now, why in the world would Serach Bas Asher be counted as 2? And it's funny. She says it herself in Shmuel Beis. When she talks to Yoav, she says, Anochi Shlumei Emunei Yisrael. I am the one who filled up the faithful ones of Israel. When we went down to Mitzrayim, I was number 70, said Serach. I was number 70, so I'm the one that counts. So she said straight out, I'm the 70th. She is the extra one. The kasha is, how is she number 70? She's already counted within the 69. She can't be number 70. So it's Yefei Tor in the Medrash Rabbah. And that Medrash Rabbah is Yefei Tor. Yefei Tor says she was a chassida. She was very wise and lived a very long time. And a person who is that showing, that perfect, can count as 2. Amazing answer. What in the world does that mean? What in the world does that mean? Now, first of all, she was counted before, there's no question whatsoever. But the Torah Shlema immediately points out and says, she was more chashuv than everyone else there? If Yosef doesn't count as 2, Yehuda doesn't count as 2, Levi doesn't count as 2, Serach Bas Asher counts as 2? For what reason? What did Serach Bas Asher do that could possibly allow her to be counted as 2 people? She's greater than all the people that were around? There's a Zohar that says, I didn't see the Zohar inside, I saw it quoted, that says that her reward in Olam Haba is she sits in a room with many other righteous women, and when an appearance of Yosef goes by, she bows down to it and said, praiseworthy am I that I was able to tell your father that you were alive. Seemingly that shows you that she wasn't as great as Yosef. She's bowing down to the image of Yosef. That means she's not as great. Yosef is greater than her. So why doesn't Yosef count as 2? Why would Serach Bas Asher count as 2? So there's an amazing answer. Torah Shlema says, you're messing up everything. You're just missing the whole point over here. You're missing the whole point. She was the last person born. Not like Yochaved. This is against the message of Yochaved. She was the last person born before they entered Egypt. Which means she was number 70. But if she was number 70, that means she wasn't number 69. So who was number 69? For that, the Medrash gives other answers. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yaakov, Hushim ben Dan, the other answers that are out there. But she was number 70, and she said out loud, I know people think that Yochaved was number 70. No, I'm number 70. I'm number 70, and I only count as 1, and there's somebody else who's instead of me. The Yefei Torah says she counts as 2, says the Torah Shlema, that makes more sense to say she is the 70th, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is number 69, or Yaakov was number 69, but I'm number 70, and that's that. But, of course, there's a Rav Moshe Wolfson, who has a crazy pshat that goes against everything you've ever heard of in your life, but it does connect to what we said before. We said earlier that if you're in the middle of a dance, and you're in the middle of your chasam, you're the happiest person in the world, then at that moment you can give a bracha, and that bracha will be awesome. Because at that moment you have a spark, you have kedusha from the Elio Anavi, right in you at that moment. Here's the pshat. There is a sefer Maor Einayim that says that when a person tells over good news, besoros tovos, to another person, whenever you tell them over there, you get a bechina, a little aspect of Elio Anavi within you. You're zilka to a tiny little bit. You're not zilka to see Elio Anavi. You're not zilka to feel that you have Elio Anavi with you. But if you get to tell good news, hey, guess what? This guy's engaged. And you're so happy, at that moment there is within you a spark of Elio Anavi. A spark, a little tiny bit of Elio Anavi. What did Serach do? Serach, the first time we ever meet her, goes up to Yaakov Avinu and tells Yaakov that Yosef is still alive. Now Yaakov is so holy. He contains all 600,000 Jews. All the 600,000 Jews that were going to live later on. He contained all of them within his own body. He was Klal Yisrael. He had all of Klal Yisrael within him. When Serach Bas Asher went to Yaakov and told him that Yosef was alive and he's the king in Mitzrayim, it's as if Eliyahu HaNavi is coming to all of Klal Yisrael and telling them Mashiach is about to come. That's how good the news was. So when Serach told over that news over to Yaakov, and Yaakov became happy, it wasn't just a spark of Eliyahu. It wasn't just a bechina of Eliyahu. Serach Bas Asher got the neshama of Eliyahu HaNavi within her body. The whole neshama of Eliyahu HaNavi joined Serach Bas Asher and came together with her and was there together with her neshama. There's something called Soda Iber. It's a type of reincarnation, but not really. It's something that's beyond all of us, in which the neshama joins into a soul that's already living, where all of a sudden you feel this extra bit of kedusha because something else joins you. Another neshama came into your body to be able to help you along with a certain thing. A chas v'shalom can go the other way as well, that Tuma can join you as well. That could ever happen. Serach Bas Asher at that moment had Eliyahu HaNavi's neshama join her body and come in with her right at that moment. Such a person that comes in as an addition right at that moment, that means that she doesn't count as one person. She's really two people. There's Serach and then there's Eliyahu HaNavi. She only counts as one in the pasuk. But Eliyahu HaNavi is included. He's right here. He's together at the exact same time, and that spark stayed with her for so long, which is why she was able to live such a long life, which is why she was able to go to Gan Eden alive. I find it interesting. It's possible that when she died, when she was gone, or brought to Gan Eden alive, I shouldn't say died, because she went to Gan Eden alive, when she went up to Gan Eden alive, that neshama returned or was joined on to Pinchas' neshama. And that's when Pinchas started to be known as Eliyahu HaNavi. At some point, Pinchas, the Kohen, the son of Eliezer, who's the son of Aaron HaKohen, at some point Pinchas turns into Eliyahu. But we don't know where that transformation took place. Maybe because Eliyahu HaNavi's neshama was with Serach the whole time, when Serach was gone, then the neshama of Eliyahu joined up with Pinchas. And that's what happened at that moment, and that's the reason why everything happened over here. This explains everything. Give me something else that Serach Bas Asher did. You know two other stories about Sarah. Pakod Pakadati. When Moshe Rabbeinu came down to Mitzrayim, he said, Pakod Pakadati, I have surely remembered Bnei Yisrael. And they came to Serach Bas Asher. All the people came to Serach Bas Asher. Is that the sign? Is that the sign of the Geula? And Serach Bas Asher said, yes. That's the sign of the Geula. And because of that, they believed Moshe and they accepted him as a Navi. Because of Serach. Why would they tell Serach? How did they know that Serach was going to live long enough to see the Savior, the person who was going to take them out of Egypt? Why would they tell Serach? Tell it over to a guy. I mean, I don't mean in any offense to women. But why are you telling it over to a woman over any of the other guys? Yair ben Menashe was alive. There's one other guy who was alive. Another son of Menashe was alive. There were people that were alive at the time. Why not tell them? Why are you telling it over to Serach? Usher, tell it over to one of them. The answer is, they knew that Serach Bas Asher would survive. They knew that she was going to live a long time. Because they knew that she had Eliyahu HaNavi within her. And as long as she had Eliyahu HaNavi, nothing was going to go wrong. And they knew that. And therefore they gave it over to her. By the way, as a side note, Pakod Pakadasi. What their question was when they ran to Serach is they said to her, Serach, he's come way too early. We're supposed to leave at the year 400. But it's only 210. What are we doing over here? Why are we leaving early? So you know what he said? Pakod Pakadati. Said Serach, Pakod, Pei, Kuf, Vav, Dalet, is 190. Pakadati. I have subtracted 190 years off your galus. That was the sign of the Geula. And Serach Bas Asher knew it. Nobody else knew it. But Serach Bas Asher knew it. She was the one who was able to say out loud, this is the answer, this is what's happening. You are going to lose 190 years. And that was the sign that was given over to her. That's that. Then there was another thing we know about Serach. What else do you know about Serach? There was one other time where they needed something and they could not leave until they came to Serach.
Oh, Yosef's bones.
That's correct. Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to find where Yosef HaTzadik was buried. He couldn't figure it out. He's going through all Mitzrayim, couldn't understand where Yosef was buried. Nobody had any idea. He went to Serach. They couldn't leave without Yosef's bones. Yosef made them swear not to leave without his bones. They went to Serach and Serach said, I remember them being in the Nile River. And they went and they found the bones in the Nile River by taking in that little petek, throwing it in, and saying, okay, Ali Shur, etc. But they were able to pull out of the water everything that was there. She had the sod of Geula, the secret of future redemption. That was what Sarah was known for. She was known more than anybody else. She was the one who had perfected and knew exactly what they needed. Tosis and Sota Daf Yud Gimel says, she is the Goel. And that's the pshat. She had Eliyahu HaNavi within her. She was the Goel. That's the power of who Sarah Pasasher was. You got to see the Radal and Perkei Rabbi Eliezer. The only thing that I'm missing over here is I don't understand what Sarah means. As you mentioned before, Naaman, the word Sarah comes probably from the word Masriach, as in smells bad. I'm assuming that's not what Sarach means. But I have no idea what the name stands for. What's the etymology? There's got to be a connection between what Sarach is and between Eliyahu HaNavi in some way, shape, or form. What her name stands for. Names of everyone in Tanakh mean something. What was Sarach known for? That I can't get. And I'm not there yet. Why did she have to be Usher's child? Why Usher's child or stepdaughter? That I don't have an answer to. There's for sure a Gilgal involved. There's for sure something in Kabbalah that we're not understanding that would just be able to add on to this to be able to tell you something immediately. But for what we know and what we have in front of us, what's known over here is that this is the sign of what Sarah Pasasha was known for. She was the goal. She was the one who helped Bnei Yisrael. She was the one who allowed them to leave Mitzrayim in the right time. We'll stop with that, guys. We went through everything about Sarah Pasasha today. We went through all the different rewards and those measures, but we'll stop with that.